I was going to speak on something that I forgot. No. But I was going to speak about the decisions that we make. I forgot the word that I was going to give class on, but decisions is okay. So all of us have to make decisions in our life. And we see in Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna was put in that situation. He had to fight. He was pulled up to the middle of the two armies, and he looked around and he saw, oh my gosh, this is all the people that I love. These are my family members on the other side. What am I going to do? And yet Krishna is telling me to fight. And he became very, it said that he was shaking. And his hairs were standing on end. And he finally said to Krishna, Krishna, I cannot fight. I can't do this. So Krishna immediately said, oh, you're speaking very wise words. But you don't know what you're talking about, basically. You know, you should recalculate what you're thinking. And in that way, the whole Bhagavad Gita ensued by Krishna telling him all about the life. And chapter 2 is contents of the Gita summarized. So all the Bhagavad Gita is set in chapter 2. And the first thing Krishna is saying is, you are not this body, right? You're a spirit soul. Now, how many people in this world, out of the 400,000 species of human life, realize that they're not this body, that they're a spirit soul? Has anybody gotten some inkling in that way themselves? Because when I was a young girl one time, I was sitting on the stairs, just thinking about life, kind of. And my parents had chickens, right? And I'm sitting there watching this chicken, and suddenly I felt like I could have been a chicken. You know, I was watching it pecking, and I was thinking what it's like without arms. You know, you can't pick things up. And it was such a strange feeling, but it was like, really? And I thought, later on, when I read Bhagavad Gita, I realized I probably was a chicken. In fact, I undoubtedly have been a chicken and a cow and a this and a that and an ant and a bird. And because we've all traveled through 8,400,000 species of life. This isn't the only life. Now, when I was brought up, it was like, this is you, and there's nothing else to it. You know, you're born, and then you die, and then that's it. There was no talk about that maybe I'm something more than just this body. So Krishna immediately dispels Arjuna's ideas that none of these people have been just in this life. They've had many births, both you and I, and all these people on this battlefield. You know, I can remember it as Krishna, but you cannot. So then Arjuna's thinking, you know, we've all been here before, right? And why? How could you? Then he talks about speaking to the sun god this knowledge. And Arjuna says, but how could you speak to the sun god? That was what he said before. He said, no, we've all had many lives. You're not that old. You're like my age. How could you be speaking to the sun god? Prabhupada says, we know that Krishna is God because he tells us. He says in Bhagavad Gita that I am the Supreme Personality. You know, everything in this universe is resting on me, just like pearls are strung on a thread, right? So everything's resting on me. I'm holding everything. So us as little living entities, and I don't know if any of you have had this experience when you fly up in the sky in a plane and you look down and you realize how many people are all over this world. And each one has his own little family and their own little set of problems and things that they're doing and their own little spheres of influence. And they're all thinking that they're God, basically. You know, that I'm making all these decisions. Everybody is going to follow my plan. And if that doesn't happen, I get angry, right? Look, I'm the lead actor in this drama. You're the side person. So stop trying to be the lead because I'm the lead, right? And then fights ensue. So Arjuna is learning that no, there's more to life than this. And we have to learn to worship God or Krishna. So somebody asked me, but how do you know that Krishna is God? And how do you know it's not all just happening? So with a big bang or however the scientists are thinking or atheistic people are thinking. But today, coming to the temple, there was a huge rainbow in the sky. Did you all see that? Beautiful rainbow. And I thought, how can that be chance? You know, we try to make a refrigerator or a dryer or a, you know, I mean, who knows how to do that? Just a few people. And they've spent so much time figuring it out, how to make it work, how to, you know. And yet this whole universe is happening by chance. That's an insane idea. You know, so I was thinking that all of our decisions or, I wish I could remember the word, but they all have a reaction, whatever we decide. And we actually have very little decisions to make. Because most of our life is being done with the modes of material nature. There's a picture in Bhagavad Gita of a man digging, and the modes of material nature are using him like a puppet, right? Because that's kind of what happens. But we have freedom of choice. That's it. That's the word. So we have freedom of choice, you know, but the freedom is very small. We're thinking that we're controlling everything because we're little gods, right, in this world. But actually, our choice is so small. It's between whether I'm going to serve the Supreme Person or whether I'm going to serve my senses. And as soon as we decide to serve the senses, then immediately the puppeteer of the three material modes of nature start making us go this way and that way. But as soon as we choose, let me worship the Supreme Person. Let me find out who he is first and what he does and where he lives and what it's all about and who am I and actually what am I here for? I remember one of my children saying, "Why am I here? What is the point in all this?" You know, and it's a good question. Why am I here? And that's the first question one should ask to start his journey to realize the Supreme Person. So Arjuna was questioning Krishna. Krishna was answering and telling him all about the modes of material nature, how everything in this world is puppeteered, kind of, by them, you know, and how he is in charge. He is the one in charge. But he doesn't really have to do anything because he has all the demigods, so many personalities that are caring for this world. What does he do? Can anybody guess? What does Krishna do? He doesn't have to take his part in making sure. He's enjoying his leelas with his devotees. Like this Damodar Leela. He's being tied by his mother with a rope. And actually, the rope is 2 inches too short. And she's getting so frustrated. And all the other ladies in the village are bringing more rope. And she's tying that rope, and still 2 inches. And it said she was getting so weary. She was perspiring, and she was feeling so tired trying to tie him. And then because of her love and her determination, those 2 inches suddenly became nothing, and she could tie him. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead loves the devotees, right, which is amazing. And I was thinking of one story in the Srimad Bhagavatam of Jad Bharat. And it's a very nice story because it shows that choices can really matter in one's life. And Jad Bharat was a very amazing king. And Bharat Maharaj. And he was such a good king. It's said that he was treated his citizens like family, like his sons and daughters. He took care of them. They were all happy. He performed many sacrifices for the benefit of the world. And then when his time as a ruler, I can't remember how many years it was some amazing celestial years, he decided, so that's it. Now I'm devoting the rest of my life to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to his worship. And it said that even when he did, in his kingdom, he did sacrifices, they weren't in the name of the demigods. They were in the name of Vasudev, Krishna. And it said even if the demigods were there, he knew that those were just parts of Vasudev's body. So he went on, he left home, he went to the Palasya ashram, I think, next to the Godavari River, and he was meditating, and it said he was getting to the point of love of God. And Then one day, while he was sitting there next to the river, he saw a deer coming to drink water. And suddenly this big lion, roar! And the deer became so frightened that she started to leap across the river. But she was pregnant and she lost the fawn in the river, who started to float down. And the deer actually went into a cave and died. She was so frightened. But John Barat saw this and he Barat Maharaj, he got up and he saved this deer and he brought it to his ashram. So as anyone would care, you know, care for another living entity. But his care took away all of his spiritual practices, I guess, because he was so enthralled with this deer, to the point that if he didn't see the deer for a little while, he would start saying, oh, the love of my life is gone. He would just talk like a mad person, right? He had totally forgotten about his spiritual practices and just became infatuated with this deer. So then it came time that he died, and the deer was sitting next to him. So what does Bhagavad Gita say? Whatever someone thinks at the time of death, at that place he will attain. So he was thinking of the deer, so he got a deer body. So now he's in this deer body, but because he was a devotee, Krishna gave him a special benefit, that he could remember his past life. So he's in this deer body, and he's going, I'm not going to make this mistake again. Let me go to where the sages are. I'm going back to where I was before, and I'm going to associate with the sages. Now, that's one choice we also have. Who to associate with? You know, we can choose to associate with saintly persons and be risen, or we can go with alcoholics or drug addicts and be fallen down to a degraded place. Prabhupada used to say, if you're a businessman, you associate with businessmen and then you become like them. So this is an important choice. So Bharat Maharaj, in the form of a deer, decided, I'm not staying with my dear mother and my dear brothers and sisters, and I'm getting out of here. I'm not going to ruin this time. So he went and he stayed with the sages, and he would eat their remnants and he would listen to their talks. And at the time of his death, then he got a body. He was born in a family of brahmanas. But he said, you know what, I don't want to get entangled in this. So I'm just going to pretend to be deaf and dumb, like I'm a stupid dullard person, so that I don't have to get involved with getting married, with getting jobs, with, you know, so many things. Things that we have to do. In fact, Krishna says everyone has to work. But he was, I don't want to get involved again. So this life, he just spent just eating whatever came his way, doing jobs, whatever his brothers or his father would try to teach him Brahminical values, and he would do everything. It said that his father would say, okay, if, you know, after eating, wash your hands. He would wash his hands before he's eating. He just, everything that his father said, he would do the wrong way around. So his father didn't give up on him, though, but he realized he's not going to be getting married. He's not going to be getting a job, or, you know, so. But then his father died and his brothers took over and they thought, this man is so stupid. Let's put him out in the field to scare the crows and the deer and stuff when we're sleeping. And so that's what they did. They put him out there and he just was thinking always of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To him, that was good because he didn't get entangled in anything. Nobody distracted him and he just thought of Krishna. So then, these dacoits came, and they were trying to make a sacrifice for Kali. And they were going to do a human sacrifice. So this they'd lost their human, and they see Judd Brutt, and they think, ah, he would make a good one. Let's take him away. So he just went along with them. They dressed him up in nice clothes. They bathed him. They put on oils on him. And you know, he just went along with whatever, but always thinking of the Supreme Lord. And they put him in front of Kali, and they said all their mantras. And then the time came, they picked up a big sword, but Kali came, and that was the end of all of those dacoits that were trying to offer him. Here was a devotee of the Lord, and she knew this is a devotee, a great devotee of the Lord. So then he went on. He chose to keep going, just to walk wherever, not to go back to his father's home. And he was walking, and then this king came, King Rahugana, on his palanquin. And, you know, one of his carriers had broken a leg or something, and they said, oh, let's get that guy. Look, he looks strong. And so they put him on one of the, and he's carrying, but he's watching, and there's bugs and ants, and he's moving so as not to trample any of the living entities underfoot. And the king's saying, hey, who's making my ride so uncomfortable? You know, and they're going, stop that, walk properly. So he's going along, but still he's moving, you know, trying to, and the king, put me down. And then he's, you're so strong, and you can't even carry a palanquin. And he just berated him with words. Now just do it properly. And he gets back on the palanquin, and again. So then finally, the king said, don't you know who I am? I'm the king, and you're just a servant. Why are you doing this? And then John Bharat spoke such eloquent philosophy that you're thinking you're the king and I'm the servant. But it might change next time around, and I'll be the king and you're the servant. We're not these bodies. We're spirit souls. We're eternal servants of the Supreme Lord, all of us, whatever body we're in. Then the king realized, I have made a big mistake. And he immediately paid dandavats at the feet of Judd Brutt and inquired more about this philosophy. He said, I didn't realize you look like a dullard. And yet you're speaking this philosophy and you're walking around. The king compared it to, I think, a diamond that's covered by ash or something. And you cannot be, nobody can tell that you're this saintly person. So in this way, these ideas of Judd Brutt from the beginning, seeing his mistake and then carrying on, but making it so that he can make it back to Godhead. This is what we need to do ourselves, is that reading Bhagavad Gita, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees. And Lord Chaitanya, in this age, gave us a special benediction that we can chant his holy names. You know, and that purification of chanting is like thousands of years of meditation. And he offered us love of God through this chanting. We can get love of God. And not just any, but the highest love for God, which is the love between the gopis and Sri Krishna, and Goloka Vrindavan, the land of the cows. You know, we can actually go there, which is so amazing. If you think of, you know, we're like imprisoned here in these bodies, and yet we can be freed from that. And just by chanting Krishna's holy names, you know, what is that sloka chanting? It's the only way, yeah. Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. It's the only way in this age is to chant the holy names, chant the holy names, chant the holy names of the Lord. And it's so nice, and it's so easy, and yet we can reach perfection by that. So it really behooves all of us to make that choice. You know, to make the choice in this age, because really, Prabhupada, actually, in the center of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, this is the most secret of all secrets. And it's the Rajavidya, Rajaguyam. It's the king of education. So in this life, so many people are looking for education. Okay, their university is packed full. There's universities in every city and town, practically. There's colleges, all looking for some sort of education. And they're making choices. What do I want to be? What do I want to do? You know, okay, I'll take these classes to become this. I'll do, you know. And then what happens? Then the time of death comes. What do they say? Sure is death. There's no one who escapes in this world. Mrityalok. It's the land of death. So, you know, we're making all these big idea decisions, and we have to work, so they're necessary. But we need to keep our spiritual life going as well. And that's where this Hare Krishna mantra can be done anywhere, anytime. So even if we're working, if we're going to school, we need that. But the real education is this Bhagavad Gita. That's the real education. Or we might get our education for our work, but the real education for life, which takes us through birth and death, and into the next birth, or no birth, depending on how well we study, that's real, everlasting education. That's the king of education. And it's something that everyone should take seriously. You know, because how long is this lifetime? It's so short. I look at mine, I think, okay, I'm at least 3/4 finished. And you can look at the end. One of my god sisters the other day was saying, you know, I might have 10 years maybe left. You know, it's time to get serious. And yet we don't even know when our time is over. It can be tomorrow. Even when we're young babies die, young children die. We have no idea when that time will come for us. So we have to make certain that we take up this process seriously. Srila Prabhupada was always saying, please, this one life, you know, seriously take up Krishna consciousness. You know, give this one life to Krishna. And we can still be mothers or business people or fathers or farmers or cowherd men or so many things, cooks, whatever. But the most important part is our spiritual life. That is the supreme goal for everyone. So we need to take it up ourselves and share it with others. You know, and everyone can take part. Prabhupada said this chanting, this Maha Mantra, anyone can do. Even a child can do. Even a dog can do. We can all chant. You know, we can all hear with our two ears. And we can chant. And taking prasadam. I was reading how Narada Muni, when he was talking about his life, he said, I was just a maidservant's son. And I was just serving the sages. But I asked them, can I have your remnants? Can I eat what you left? And they said, okay. And so he was always eating their remnants and hearing. And he said, that is what gave me the life of Narada Muni. You know, so all of us can take this, take prasadam offered to the Lord. It's such an amazing thing. What is that one song, Narada Muni, Bhajaya Vina, and Prabhupada gives the purport, and he says, you know, when Parvati sees Lord Shiva dancing in ecstasy, she's saying, what did you have? What did you didn't share any with me? When he says, so, you know, prasadam is such an amazing thing. You know, and it can change our whole lives. What to speak of chanting? Chanting, prasadam, dancing, doing service, whatever service we can do. And anyone can take part. So, seriously, we should make that choice. You know, the choice of trying to perfect this life and get out of the cycle of becoming a deer or a cow or a, you know, another baby in another womb. And if you read the, is it the, which canto for the baby in the womb? Third? That's right. So, you know, when you read about the suffering in the womb, I remember when I was pregnant one of the times and the midwives all go, oh, they're so cozy there, you know, it's all wrapped up and warm and, you know, and you're thinking, then why are they kicking and punching and trying, you know, they don't feel very peaceful. But you read the third canto and you see it is not a peaceful place to be in the womb of a mother, in another womb of a mother, another birth, another death. You know, I remember when I had one of my sons and I was in so much pain and labor and so much pain and thinking, oh my gosh, I wish I could just go away and come back and get the baby and, you know, not have to go through all this. And then that wherever there is birth, there is death came from Bhagavad Gita. Okay, I'm in this situation and I'm going to give birth, but just like that, I'm going to die. You know, the same. I've taken birth in this body and I'm going to die. You know, and it's a wake-up call that, yeah, this is reality. We can pretend that everything's great and we're just living and it's all fun and, you know, but it isn't all fun. And soon our hair goes gray and starts falling out and everything quits working properly and, you know, it's not the time then to take up spiritual life. It's the time now. Prahlad Maharaj said to his friends in school, don't wait till you're old. Now is the time to do it. You spend all these years in school, you spend all these years playing, you know, then you get married and have family, and then you'll do it when you're old? Not going to happen. It's now. Now. We need to take seriously now our spiritual life. So, I'll stop there. And if anybody has any questions or comments or additions or...
Very nice, Rukhira. Thank you. Thank you. I especially like that comment you made. When you're in labor, you of course feel the force of birth like not, no other time. And you can realize that, yeah, this birth is real and the death is real. Mm-hmm. Very profound, very deep. So I was thinking that you were mentioning how we have to take up the process now. Prabhupada gives the analogy that when you're going to school, you sacrifice. Some kids are out playing and, you know, are having fun, but if you're going to be a serious student, you have to let go of all that and study. And the reason why you do that is so that when your life later is better, in the sense that now you have a source of making an income, and that's why you do it. So it's the same way, isn't it, that we have to do our spiritual life now so that we can reap the real rewards which are out of this world. I think that's what you were saying.
Yes, yes.
My question about this is a different topic. You mentioned at the time of death, whatever you're thinking about, that's the birth that you take. So you have a gata sukriti, we hear somebody can chant Hare Krishna once and it can save them from the cycle of birth and death. You have people that do devotional service from morning till night. And then you have someone that dies and they remember Krishna. So if you're doing devotional service a lot of their life, and then you happen to be in a situation where you can't think of Krishna at the end. So how does all that work?
I remember hearing someone ask Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, no, Krishna will force himself into your mind. You know, he's not... There's one lecture Prabhupada was giving about Ajameel, and I'll never forget it because it was so... Now I probably forgot it, but it was so profound that he said, Krishna is not an ungrateful master. You know, he sees everything that we do for him, and he's grateful. He's not going to just kick you aside because you're in a situation where he will force himself into your mind. But we have to practice as well, and we have to serve with love. That love is the secret ingredient, really. You know, just we can serve, we can do all kinds of things without love, and what does it mean, you know? But that love is that special ingredient, serving with love. And then Krishna will be there. Even if we forget, he will force us to remember. Yeah, just like being a deer. You know, he remembered, and he kept remembering until he made it. So, you know, Krishna will take care of us. We don't have to worry. It's just like that little boy whose father has the ticket. Prabhupada said himself, he said, and the ticket man came around and said, where's your ticket? You have to get off if you don't have a ticket. And Srila Prabhupada said, I was just young, but I knew my father had the ticket. So I had no worries. And he said, just like that, we should feel with Krishna. That Krishna has our ticket. We just have to serve and love. And then there's no problem. And I think I'm not saying that, you know, everyone has to give up everything and just, you know, become, I don't know, like a fanatical person. We still have to do whatever work, but realize that our most important thing is our sadhana, our actual, you know, service to Krishna. And yeah. Okay. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Mother Richard. That was a wonderful class.
Thank you.
So in giving this one life to Krishna, I'm thinking about historically, recently it kind of hit me for the first time that Srila Prabhupada gave women sort of an unprecedented opportunity to take, for example, to take brahminical initiation, mm-hmm. and to take these vows, to chant 16 rounds a day, to follow the four yoga principles, and to do the full program. And so we have all of that on top of the role of women, mm-hmm. where traditionally women served their husbands and followed their husbands, and they received spiritual credit for that. So now we have the opportunity to really take responsibility for our own spiritual life. Sometimes for me, I feel like I'm treading water. Like I'm trying to do it all, and it feels like a lot. Like being here in the class tonight, and my husband's out there with the kids who are already crying for me, and it's like a miracle that I'm here. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's a phase of life, and it's a special time, and it creates a hunger for spirituality. Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm just asking is, you have the experience of having many children in Krishna consciousness and being such an amazing example. Mm. How did you do that when your children were young? How do we... I don't know, is it...
You have to prioritize. And Srila Prabhupada said these children are like your deities. You don't have to worry about the deity worship. And you're worshiping... They're going to become good devotees. So that's your... But the chanting... For me, that's what if you keep going with your chanting japa and do service where you can, but your children and your japa. And then later on, they're only small for so long. And then you have plenty of time for doing so much service. No, but yeah, at that point, that is your service. And you see it. You know, like I was thinking, everything that we do is service to Krishna. Really. You know, like everything we do, taking care of children, cooking prasadam for our family, we're offering it to Krishna. It's all service, and we can see it as devotional service. Then we're not missing anything. You know, we're not missing anything. And you know, these children aren't, we think they're my son, my daughter, but really they're other souls coming for us to take care of. They're devotees being born to us, and they're ours to take care of, but they're not ours. They're Krishna's. You know, so we see it as service to Krishna. So I think that's the best way. And then later on, life opens up, you can do so many things. You know, it's kind of even like when you get older. When you're younger, you're busy doing this and that. And then you get older and you have some time. You can't do all that. Then you have more time for hearing and chanting and, you know, the things you've been practicing sporadically while you're looking after children and doing your work, and then you can really concentrate on. You know, that's the time for perfection, really. So you just have to be patient. That's one of the things in nectar devotion, patience we have to have in our spiritual life. And don't be too hard on yourself. You know, it comes. And Krishna helps. Okay? Thank you. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.